It's Tuesday, February 1, 2011. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. The world continues to watch escalating events in Egypt with great interest. The news that developed on Monday had to do with the Egyptian military saying that it would not fire upon protesters. This is in marked contrast to what has happened in many other revolutions and riotous situations, and it certainly draws into question the actual direction of the Mubarak regime. Why? Well, because that regime is itself a military leadership. Mubarak was an Air Force general who took place from Anwar Sadat, who had also been a general. And so when the military says that it will not fire upon protesters, many international observers are beginning to ask the question as to whether the military is now under the control of the government. Other troubling developments happened over the weekend and continued into Monday. One was the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood, a Muslim extremist group that is one of the original Islamofascist groups in the world, has raised its head and in a more and public way is now taking control of many of the conversations. At the very least, if you're watching from the international scene, it appears that the Muslim Brotherhood has appeared as a necessary part of any future government in terms of the political calculations currently that are made by observers. Now, other things to watch have to do with Israel's preparations in the event that Egypt really does turn into an Islamic regime. There is no question that Israel has to be watching the situation very closely, but so is the United States. Just consider for a moment the fact that an incredible percentage of the oil that fuels American industry and cars goes through the Suez Canal. Ever since the late 1950s, the United States military has, in effect, been the guarantor of the freedom of the Suez Canal. The United States has made clear that the Suez Canal is a vital conduit of American security. So, as much as people at the international scene will look at Israel and its proximity and imagine that it has much at stake in Egypt, so also we need to remember, does the United States. From a Christian perspective, there are so many angles of this that are important, but one central issue is this: no one is in control. There is no human authority that has adequate control over the situation. There are no fingers an individual can snap. There is no individual human voice that can speak, that can bring coherence and a certain direction to this equation. We remember that nature abhors a vacuum. So also does social space. If the Mubarak regime fails, something will come to fill that space. In terms of recent developments with regimes in the area, particularly looking at Iran, what often happens is that the regime that immediately follows a long dictatorship is a very short-lived regime. We'll be watching closely, day by day and hour by hour. Yesterday I mentioned that we'll be taking a look at a story from the New York Times that appeared on Sunday. Here's a headline that should have your attention. A chicken chain's corporate ethos is questioned by gay rights advocates. Kim Severson reports for the New York Times that the Chick-fil-A company is now in the center of the target of gay rights activists. Why? Well, the precipitating reason has to do with the fact that one Chick-fil-A affiliate provided food for a pro-family organization. Let me just read to you from the article. Severson reports the Chick-fil-A sandwich, a hand-breaded chicken breast and a couple of pickles squished into a steamy, white-buttered bun, is a staple of some southern diets and a must-have for people who collect regional food experiences the way some people collect baseball cards. But then, she says, nicknamed Jesus Chicken by jaded secular fans and embraced by evangelical Christians, Chick-fil-A is among only a handful of large American companies with conservative religion built into its corporate ethos. But recently its ethos has run smack into the gay rights movement. Now, if you read this article in the New York Times, and I seriously hope you will, you'll discover something fundamental about the challenge that is faced not only by Christians in business, but by Christians on a college campus, or Christians in any other cultural context. What I mean is this. In this case, the Chick-fil-A Corporation is being targeted by gay rights activists for several specific offenses in the eyes of gay rights communities. Number one, it has provided aid to pro-family movements. Now, the aid may be very minimal in terms of total corporate support, but let's remember that social meaning is often measured by gesture, and the gay rights activists see that as a very strong gesture. Secondly, as this article suggests, there is a very clear Christian religious ethos that is built into the corporate ethos of Chick-fil-A. Now, one of the things that is very clear is that Chick-fil-A and its founders, the Cathy family, put a great premium on marriage. I myself have had the opportunity to know this company and know its leaders, and I have been to some of their sites where, indeed, they hold retreats, very generously supported by the family and its foundation, in support of married couples for the repair and sustenance and enrichment of their marriage. Now, there is no doubt that the Cathys are doing this out of their Christian conviction, and there's no doubt that they are doing it with the full support of so many of the people who by the millions are buying Chick-fil-A sandwiches. But what you'll notice in this case is that this Chick-fil-A company has done nothing to target gay rights, has done nothing to target gay activism, has done nothing in this case even to speak to the issue of homosexuality. So why is it in trouble? It's in trouble because it simply will not bend. It's in trouble because it's corporate ethos. That is the word appropriately used by Kim Severson in this article, is one that is clearly based in the fact that its owners are deeply committed Christians. Now, the point of all of this is that this story is about Chick-fil-A. But the reality is that this account demonstrates something that we all deeply need to know. What is being demanded of Christians in the public square is not only an issue of silence on homosexuality, but active support and endorsement of homosexuality. In this case, a company as positive as Chick-fil-A is being targeted because even as a privately owned company, it supposedly is violating the rights or interests of homosexuals by the fact that it holds to the Christian ethos of its owners. Now, I'll tell you, Chick-fil-A is safe in terms of public support. It clearly has a very strong and dedicated customer base. But this story indicates that there are activists who simply will not rest until every company, every institution, and eventually, I will tell you, every church and every denomination bends its knee and accepts a public endorsement of homosexuality. Nothing less, as this story makes very clear, is acceptable to those who are pushing this agenda. Now, on the issue of homosexuality, I want to make reference to two additional articles in the New York Times that appeared on two successive days by two different reporters with connections that appear to have been missed by the paper's editors. Here's the first article. It appeared on the 29th. The article says, "Gays seeking asylum in U.S. encounter a new hurdle." Dan Belevsky writes a fascinating article, and it comes down to this. The United States has established immigration policies that establish one reason, among others, for which an immigration exception may be given for entrance into the United States. And that is that if a person claims to be homosexual and claims that being a homosexual will be the reason for persecution in his or her home country, they may be accepted for asylum in the United States. So why the news article? Well, it turns out that when the provision was put in place, there were very few people who actually wanted to identify as homosexuals. But now, and this tells you something about the sea change in morality that is happening in our times, the reality is that we have people who are claiming to be homosexual simply because they want to remain in this country under asylum. In other words, the new responsibility for the INS is to determine whether persons who actually claim to be homosexual are homosexual. That's a complete turn of the tables in terms of the moral equation. And it's also a fascinating article. How, indeed, does the INS prove or disprove that a person is a homosexual? One of the things that is evidently coming into play here is just how, quote, obviously, end quote, a person appears to be a homosexual, suggesting that it's only if one appears to be a homosexual that one might actually be endangered back in a home country that would discriminate against homosexuality. But homosexual activists say that it is unfair to claim that one must appear to be a homosexual in order to be a homosexual, and they claim that plays right into stereotypes. This is a weird world, getting weirder by the moment. The very next day, another article appeared in the New York Times, this by reporter John Burns, who reports that a judge in Britain has given asylum to a Ugandan woman precisely out of this kind of fear. Now, it would have been interesting if the editors had required the two stories to be related, but when you start to look at the issues related to this Ugandan story, it's quite obviously related in terms of the actual content. Listen to this. The lawyer for the woman said he would argue that she should be allowed to remain in Britain regardless of her sexuality because she has declared herself to be a lesbian, end quote. Now, why would he say that? Well, he says that precisely because of the issue raised in the previous day's article. And that is that many people think this woman is claiming to be a lesbian simply so that she can claim an asylum based upon her sexuality. The story continues. The argument would invoke a British Supreme Court ruling last year that directed lower courts to consider in their rulings on deportation cases not only whether a litigant was actually gay, but whether they were, quote, someone who would be treated as gay by potential persecutors in the country of origin, end quote. The reporter ended the story with that quotation, apparently having no idea where to go with it. And that, frankly, is my problem right now as well. Again, this tells us where the world is. And maybe it also tells us where the world is going. Finally, we noted last week the passing of Jack LaLanne in his 90s after living a life preaching and prophesying about the good health benefits of exercise. Now, even as Mr. LaLanne became something of a cultural metaphor, I thought when people talked about LaLanne as the prophet of the religion of health and fitness, that they were speaking metaphorically. Little did I know that Mr. LaLanne saw it in rather concrete terms. Frank Bruni, who always writes interesting material for the New York Times, indicates that Mr. LaLanne saw himself as something of a Billy Graham of physical fitness. Mr. Bruni writes, he once compared himself to Billy Graham, saying that while Mr. Graham was for the hereafter, he was for the here and now. He called what he was doing a crusade, saying, to me, this one thing, physical culture and nutrition, is the salvation of America. He admitted, by the way, that he didn't like exercise. He did it because he said he had to do it. But he said, in order to have a healthy mind and soul and spirit, you have to start with the physical. You start with the body to get to deeper levels. Well, Mr. LaLanne, it's not the most important thing now, is it? Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmohler.com. For information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information about Boyce College, go to boycecollege.com. I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.